everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know what we are, but not what we will become. And I believe that to be very true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into cells and then reforms into a butterfly. Obviously, that's not easy, but it's not finished. It then has to struggle and fight to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to take it wherever it needs to go. None of that can be easy, but neither is busting through limits that society places upon us. And today, I'm happy to have Chet Galeska, and I hope I said your last name correctly. I didn't ask you that ahead of time. And he is a diabetes expert. And diabetes is one of those invisible disabilities that I have mentioned before on the show, meaning you don't see it. You don't necessarily see someone and say, oh, I can tell that person has diabetes. And so sometimes how we treat that person, what we think about that person's ability levels is very incorrect. And Chet has written an entire book to help us demystify, basically, diabetes. And so, Chet, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Shelley. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. I'm glad to have you. And I'm really excited to learn more and have you share more about diabetes, because I'll be honest, I have family members who have it. I've had students who've had it. And I think I kind of know, but I don't know all that there is to know about it. And I don't think I'm alone in that situation. So before we dive in, I just want to do a couple of business things here really quick. Make sure if you're joining us that you type it into the comment section that you're watching Hashtag Live. Tell us where you're joining from. And also, Chet has graciously decided that if you follow a few steps, we will put you in a drawing to get a copy, an electronic copy of his book. So make sure that you like this channel, is subscribed to the YouTube channel, you leave a comment, and then you share this episode. If you do those three things within the 48 hours of this airing, you will be entered into the drawing to win a copy of his ebook. So I think that's all the business stuff. So Chet, tell us a little bit more about your journey and what brought you to writing this book.
Sure. Let me explain, first of all, that I'm not a medical professional of any kind. I'm a business person. I'm retired, but I have had type 1 diabetes for over 40 years. I've done well with it. In fact, I've done well enough that the Joslin Diabetes Center at Harvard asked me to be part of a study of people who have done well with the disease so that they can figure out what may be going right or wrong with me and other people like me. So I've learned quite a bit about it. And I've done well with it over the years. I have discovered pretty early on that there's a stigma associated with diabetes that's unfair. It's certainly unfair in the case of type 1s, but it more applies to type 2s, and I'll explain that later on. Before we get started, I think we should really talk about the basics of why I'm doing this and also what diabetes actually is. Like you, Shelley, most people have kind of a hazy understanding of diabetes, but generally what they believe is not correct. And my job here is to just lay out the very basics of what's happening, what can be done about it, and, you know, various other aspects of it. So let me start by telling you what made me decide to get into this in the first place. I was in Chicago a number of years ago during the week when Ron Santo was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. I didn't know anything about Santo until that week, but there was a lot written about him in the local papers and on TV and whatnot. And it turned out that Santo had type 1 diabetes back in the 1960s. He didn't tell anybody about it because he was afraid the Cubs would fire him if they found out. And back in the 1960s, he was probably right about that. Mm-hmm. So he kept it to himself. The only person who knew on the team was his roommate, and he kept it quiet as well. So there's a game in Chicago. It's the last of the ninth. There are two people on base. There's two outs, and the Cubs are down by two. Santa was in the on-deck circle. Now, let me take a break right now to explain something you need to know to get this story. With diabetes, everybody knows that high blood sugars is what causes the long-term complications. But low blood sugars can be a problem also, but in a different way. The problem is that if you take insulin, there's a good chance your sugar can go too low. And that's a problem because your brain takes sugar directly from the bloodstream. It doesn't store it like other cells in the body do. So when there's a shortage of sugar in the blood, the brain starts to get kind of funky. Since the brain controls everything, you can lose your coordination. You can start seeing double or triple. You start sweating profusely. And a lot of other things happen. If it gets too low, you can pass out. So it's something that needs to be dealt with. Luckily, it's easy to deal with because all you need to do is eat something sugary. And once that sugar boosts up your blood sugar, the symptoms go away and you're fine. So Santa is in the on-deck circle and he feels the symptoms of low blood sugar coming on. He knows what's in store for him if it gets too low. So he just prays that the guy at the plate will make it out and retire the side. Instead, the batter walks. So now it's bases loaded, down by two, two outs. Santa walks up to the plate. He said he looked up, seeing in triple. There were three scoreboards, three pitchers, 30-some-odd people standing out in the field. When the pitcher threw the ball, he said it looked like it had a slinky attached to the back of it.
So he
took a cut at it, and he put it out of the park for a walk-off grand slam home run.
Oh, my gosh.
He managed to make it around the bases and back to the dugout to get his candy bar before anybody knew. But he came within a whisker of a real disaster in front of all those people in the stadium.
Right.
So I read this story and I thought, wow, this is a fabulous story from a diabetic's point of view. Everybody else thought, wow, how dramatic, a walk-off grand slam home run. And I'm thinking, man, I've been there. I've known when my blood sugar is going down, and I know the pressure you feel to get it back up before it gets too low. But I can't imagine doing it in front of 20,000 people in a situation like that.
Right.
So nobody knew this story until 10 years later, after Santa had won 5 Golden Gloves and was an all-star player for the Cubs, and they had Ron Santo Day. And it was then that he finally came clean about being a type 1 diabetic for all those years. Of course, at that time, it was too late for them to do anything about Santo,
right,
as far as firing him goes. But I heard that story and I thought, man, this is fabulous. So I came home and started telling people the story, only to realize how poorly most people understand diabetes. I would tell them the story without that explanation up front that I gave you, and they would be totally clueless about what I was talking about. Now, that was bad enough. What was worse is that they would ask me questions about diabetes, especially about type 2. And I discovered that I didn't know much about type 2. In fact, a lot of what I believed about type 2 was also wrong. So that's how I really came to grips with the fact that we have a serious problem out there where the information in the world of diabetes is confusing. And we need to know the basics just so we have a base to make decisions on. We can figure out what's probably right and what's probably wrong. And that's what I try to do. I'm not offering any surefire cures or anything like that. I'm just saying, look, this is the basics.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I need to explain what diabetes actually is. Diabetes is a condition that results in excessively high blood sugar levels in your bloodstream. This is dangerous because your blood goes everywhere in your body and it damages every part of your body. If you think of it this way, you'll get the point. If you take water and you mix sugar into it, stir it up, what happens? The sugar gets sticky. Well, you're doing the exact same thing to your blood. Essentially, you're making it sticky. So as that blood runs around your body and it's got high sugar contents, it builds up plaque in the blood vessels, causes heart problems, kidney failure, blindness, amputations. That's the base of all the complications that happen. It's from that sugar that is at too high a level in your bloodstream. So it's something that you need to deal with. Historically, it has always been a fatal disease until 1925, when insulin was purified enough to be used as a therapy. Since that point on, we've been able to manage the disease. But until then, whether you had type 1 or type 2, it was fatal 100% of the time.
Wow.
Now, so that's lost on us now. You know, we all know diabetics who are hanging in there and seem to be doing well, but an awful lot of them aren't, and they don't even know better. And that's part of the problem here. This is why we have to educate people. So let me explain how diabetes operates. First thing is, how regular people handle digestion. When you eat food, it gets digested into glucose, which is a very simple sugar. The glucose goes into your bloodstream. It gets delivered to every cell in your body. When your pancreas senses that that glucose is there, it produces a hormone called insulin. Insulin's job is to act as a key that opens the cell walls that enables the blood sugar to go from the bloodstream into the cell, and the cell is, then uses it for energy. As the insulin works, the blood level comes down to the normal level, and it gets maintained there. It's up and down. After you eat, the blood sugar level does go up, but in normal people, it comes right back down. Now, with diabetics, we don't have that luxury. There's something that's gone wrong. In the case of type 1, we have an autoimmune disease that has turned the body's cells against itself. It kills off the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas, so I and other type 1s don't produce much, if any, insulin. So we have to give ourselves insulin directly. The only way to take it is through injection because insulin breaks down in digestion. That's why type 1s take shots many times, several times a day. Type 2 is a little more complicated because it's a different disease that happens to cause high blood sugar. In that case, they have an underlying condition called insulin resistance. Now, we don't know why this happens, but the body becomes resistant to insulin, meaning that it takes more and more insulin to unlock those cell walls to let the glucose in the cells and out of the bloodstream. Over a period of time, usually 8 to 10 years, the pancreas gets overworked to the point where you lose about half of the cells that produce insulin. So when you're diagnosed as a pre-diabetic, your pancreas is already starting to not be able to keep up. So that condition is incurable, just like the autoimmune disease in type 1 is incurable. So once you have that underlying condition of insulin resistance, you are in a fight to control your blood sugars for the rest of your life, unless something happens to cure it. So that's where we are. With type 2, it is the most common type. It's about 95% of cases are type 2.
Okay.
The other 5% are type 1, and a very small number are from pregnancy and that sort of thing. But those are the two main types. But I find I'm talking about type 2 more than anything because that's where the most damage is being done because people don't understand the disease well enough.
Right. Well, it was very complicated. I mean, I know you tried to make it as simple as possible, but trying to follow, okay, this one was type 1, and then I felt like I was like right there with you, and then you went to type 2, and then I was trying to think, okay, now how was that different than type 1? And I mean, I know they're two separate things, but you know, I'm the kind of person that I have to take time to process information, and so
sure.
You know, for me, I'm still like, okay, I still think I'm in the haze that I was before this, but now that you've given me clearer information, as time goes on, that will process in my brain and I will have a better understanding.
Well, let me put it a little different way.
Okay.
With type 2s, most people think that type 2s got their disease because they're overweight, sedentary, and they ate too much sugar. Or something along those lines.
Okay.
You know, the medical profession is guilty of this. They've been using this line for a long time. But if you don't have insulin resistance, you won't have type 2, no matter how much you weigh.
Okay.
So that's the critical part, insulin resistance. And that's something that most diabetics aren't even aware exists. But that is the underlying cause, and you We don't know why you got it. We know that there are at least 117 genes that are responsible for it. In fact, that was out of a study that was just completed at the University of Massachusetts. And that's at least 117. They think there are probably a lot more. So we know there's that connection, but we have known that for a long time.
Okay.
You know, all you really have to do is look at the fact that it's more prevalent in certain ethnicities and racial groups. You can see that it runs in families. So we've known just by looking at those things that there's got to be a genetic key to it. In fact, it's so pronounced that they've identified the differences in the groups. They're like people who are of African descent are more likely to get it. Hispanics, Native Americans, Pacific Islanders. These are all groups that have a higher likelihood of getting type 2 diabetes. Now, that's nothing to do with personal behavior. That's right. Just a genetic fact. In my case, I've got type 1. People who are of Northern European descent are more likely to be type 1. Now, my heritage is Polish and German. So there you are. In my case, anyway, that holds true. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you don't have to be these groups to get diabetes, because they will hit practically anybody at any time. It just depends on your particular genetic makeup and whether you hit something that triggers it. And unfortunately, in either case, we don't know what the triggers might be.
Right. And is there any kind of test or something that can be done specifically even in those categories that you mentioned that have a higher prevalence of type 2 to see if they have insulin resistance earlier in life?
Well, that's a really good question, Shelley. The answer is that for type 1, there is no test at all. You know, I mean, when it hits you immediately like a ton of bricks. Okay. It might take a couple of months for you to realize that you've got the problem, but it happens right away.
Okay.
Relatively right away. With type 2, it takes much longer. As far as the test for insulin resistance goes, there is one, but it's very expensive and it's used for clinical research. So it's nothing that is cheap enough to use as a regular tool. The way type 2 gets diagnosed is through high blood sugars. If you have high blood sugar, that indicates you've got insulin resistance.
Okay.
So luckily, you can catch that fairly early. When they diagnose prediabetes, that means that your blood sugar is higher than normal, but it's still not high enough to be classified as diabetes. And at that point, you should follow the things that I'll be talking about later on as to how to control those blood sugars, even in the first place. And this is critical, and it's something that doesn't get conveyed very often. I've had people tell me that their doctor diagnosed them and told them, well, we'll keep an eye on it with no further advice. Mm-hmm. A guy just recently told me that he got diagnosed and his doctor told him to stop eating bread. Well, that's part of controlling carbohydrate, but it's a lot more complicated than stopping eating bread. Mm-hmm. So people don't get this basic information they should get. The goal here, once you know you have prediabetes, is to preserve your pancreas's ability to make insulin for as long as you can. The way you can do that is by reducing the amount of sugar you put in your bloodstream, which means reducing the amount of carbohydrate that you eat. It's not just sugar per se, it's carbohydrate, because carbohydrate, believe it or not, digests into the same amount of sugar. Mm-hmm. 1 gram of bread will digest into 1 gram of sugar. So it's the same thing. But people have to be aware that that's what they need to do. The more they can cut down those carbohydrates, the less demand is put on your pancreas to produce more insulin, and therefore the longer that capacity will last. And the longer it lasts, the easier it's going to be to control your blood sugars, because at least part of it is going to be on automatic pilot, meaning just like a normal person, you know, your regular capacity to make insulin is still going to be there. You know, as long as you help it along, it can last for a good long time. In fact, there are some people, there aren't many, but there are some people who have enough willpower to control their blood sugars just through diet and exercise, and they do it rigidly enough that they never need any medication at all. They manage to preserve that capacity, you know, right through their entire life. So that's something, you know, I'm certainly not tough enough to do that, and most other people aren't either. But that's the point I'm making. You know, the more you can preserve it, the better off you'll be.
Right. Now, most of my life, I've been a teacher, an educator in some way. So I've worked with children. And so what is the prevalence of either type 1 or type 2 in children?
Well, it used to be that the two types were called adult onset, which would be type 1 because type 2 because people generally got it when they're later in life. And type 1 was juvenile diabetes because a lot of younger people got it. But they've kind of morphed in the sense that a lot of people who get type 1 get it later in life. They don't get it as children. I got it when I was 29 years old, so I was well past that stage. Sure. And a lot of other people get type 1 later in life, too. With type 2, now we find that a lot of kids are getting type 2. And nobody really knows why that happens. I've got my own theories about it that I hate to share because I'm not an expert and I can't back any of it up with science. So I shy away from things that I can't actually back up. But the fact is that more kids are getting type 2 now than ever before.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, just talking about sugar intake kind of lends theories in my head, as I'm sure if people sat and thought about it for a second, just what is mostly in the American diet and mostly in a kid's American diet.
Well, let's look back to what I explained about insulin resistance.
Right.
Once you have insulin resistance, if you eat a lot of carbohydrate, you're going to put that stress on your pancreas. It's going to kill off more cells, and your blood sugar is going to rise to diabetic levels much faster. And the high-carb diet that we have here in the United States, plus the volume of food that we eat in the United States, has to make the problem worse. You know, there's a distinction between insulin resistance and a diabetes diagnosis. A diabetes diagnosis happens when your blood sugar gets over a certain level. So if your blood sugar is under 126 milligrams per deciliter, that's the trigger for a diabetes diagnosis. It doesn't mean it's a different disease. The disease hasn't changed. It's still, at its heart, insulin resistance. And you know, this is part of the confusion that's out there, Shelley. You know, you hear sometimes that people will say, well, I know you can cure diabetes. And people will say that they have a cure for diabetes. But when you read the fine print, all they're doing is saying, control your diet and exercise. These are the tried and true ways to get your blood sugar down. And they say that, well, if you've got your blood sugar down below 126, then boom, you're cured. Well, okay, technically, you may not have a high enough blood sugar for diabetes, but you've still got insulin resistance. And if you go back to eating donuts, you know, and everything else, you're going to be uncured in a heartbeat. So it's a definition of cured that just, it's a twisted definition that misleads too many people. In fact, I talked to a podcaster who was, she was in the health business. She was a coach. And she told me that the only thing she knew about type 1 and type 2 diabetes was that type 2 was more easily curable than type 1 was. And I said, you know, neither one of them is curable. I mean, by right. the definition you're using, okay, but you never explain that to people.
Right.
And that's why that's another thing that people hear that it's curable and they have to wonder, well, you know, you've got this terrible disease and you could cure it. So why don't you?
Right.
You know, it's just a misreading of what's going on.
Right. So I want to go back a little bit to Ron Santos' story and the fact that he had this, you know, and the symptoms. So in general, you don't necessarily have the symptoms every day. Or they don't even, even if you were to maybe have the symptoms every day, maybe they're not to the same degree every day. So you're not affected in the same way. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, it fluctuates with your blood sugars, Shelley. You know, the symptoms are basically you get tired, you get lethargic, you get a little sleepy, you don't feel energetic. you urinate a lot, because when you get that high blood sugar in your blood, your body tries to get rid of it, and that's what it does. It forces you to drink and wash that blood sugar out. So if your blood sugar is running high, excuse me, those are the things that can happen.
And what a great example that you're drinking water.
Well, I'm drinking.
You're talking about it.
You know, I'm drinking water because I'm talking too much. That's what it is. And I'm making a sustained effort to speak in a louder voice. So it's putting more pressure on my vocal cords than I normally have. So this is just plain everyday dryness of throat. You probably do it more than I do. I have noticed you haven't taken a drink yet. So
I have not, okay, because I don't have anything next to me right now, but I do have a bit of a dry throat. So.
Well, you want to know something? You haven't been doing the talking here.
This is true, because I try not to, even though it's my podcast. I always try to make it about my guests. So.
Right.
Good observation.
So there you go. But yeah, my sugars are in pretty good control, and I'm not drinking it for that reason. But that is one of the big tips that you have diabetes. If you're finding you've got an unquenchable thirst and you're always in the bathroom, that's a pretty good indication you should get your blood sugar checked. In my case, I never used to get sick, and I still really never get sick. But back when I was 29, I was sick as a dog. I was laid up for half a week. I was on the sofa, had no energy at all. But then it went away, and I started feeling a little less energetic than normal. A couple months after that, I was on a business call, and I was really, really thirsty. I was experiencing those symptoms of excess thirst and the urination. So I was thirsty. I stopped in and I got myself an orange juice, which is exactly the wrong thing to do. So I drank the orange juice, and it's loaded with sugar. So all it did was make my blood sugar even worse. I was so parched, I could barely talk. So I'm not the brightest bulb. It took me a while to realize there was something really wrong here. Until I went to a Blue Cross on Business, and they had a bunch of pamphlets there about various common diseases. There was one on diabetes, so I picked it up, and I realized that I had all the symptoms except for the ones that applied to females.
Okay.
So,
well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It was a self-diagnosis. In fact, it was kind of smile about this now. I didn't even have a general practitioner at the time, so okay. my wife suggested a guy. So I went to him, and of course, he had never seen me before. He asked me what brought me there, and I said, well, I think I've got diabetes. And he gave me this look like he gives every other hypochondriac that walks in his office,
Right.
So he kind of rolls his eyes, and he took a blood sample, and he came back and said, you've got diabetes.
Thank you. Can you pay me now because I diagnosed myself?
Yeah, right. Really. Yeah. So anyway, that is the number one symptom. And anybody who has high enough blood sugars to be qualified as diabetes, they will have those symptoms.
Okay. So since the reason I brought that up is because, as I said earlier in the introduction, that I really categorize disabilities as just two, the visible and the invisible. And I've heard a lot, I'm a special education consultant, and I've heard from families all across the country that, if their child has diabetes or juvenile arthritis or something that doesn't affect them every day, that on the days when it does, or on the days when it does to a certain degree, the child isn't believed that, you were fine yesterday, or you were fine 10 minutes ago, or, you're just acting tired because you don't want to do this or that or the other thing. So two questions from that. Well, actually three. The orange juice thing, I thought that was a drink that you were supposed to give. But now that I think about it, it's supposed to be apple juice, right?
Well, it's anything that raises your blood sugar. Well, okay. To combat low blood sugar, anything that raises your blood sugar works. And orange juice is a great one to do that because it's got so much sugar in it. As a regular part of your diet, not so much. Okay. You should be drinking water or, a no-carb beverage of some sort. So it's got its place.
Okay.
You know, if a child's running low, the school nurse will know that. I mean, I know that with school nurses, they know when a kid's got diabetes, and they would be well versed in what's going on. Teachers probably not so much.
Right. And that is the problem that I have run into in a lot of these areas where the parents are saying that their child isn't believed, is there isn't a school nurse, or, you know, if there is a school nurse for a district, she's maybe, or he's not in the building where their child is. And so my second question then is, as an adult, do you find that people don't always believe you when you tell them, you know, oh, I can't do this because, you know, I'm really worn down from the effects of my diabetes today, or my sugars are off, and so I need to go do this in order to get them back in line?
Yeah, I can't say that I haven't been believed. Now that practically everybody I know knows I have diabetes, and I have probably explained something about it to them, they get it. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things I'm trying to accomplish here. I would like everybody to understand the basics so that they can share it with other people they know, whether they have diabetes or not, and get the word out that way. Because if you go to the web and try to find information, you're going to get hit with all kinds of contradictory stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, the confusion is part of the problem here. You know, if we just get back to basics and teach each other, we will know. Even if you're teachers, you're talking about the kids. If the teachers know the basics, just what you and I talked about over the last few minutes, understand that if the kid's got high blood sugar, he is feeling run down. Mm-hmm. You know, once they understand that, then they'll cut the kids some slack. A bigger problem than people not understanding is that diabetics don't talk about their disease. Mm-hmm. It's very common for diabetics to keep it to themselves. I did for 30 years. When I was first diagnosed, I only told people who were very close to me, my family, or they needed to know for business purposes. Other than that, I asked everybody not to let the word get out, because I myself thought that diabetics were somehow weaker than other people, and I did not want that to be what people thought of me. A little bit of background. When I was diagnosed, I was 2 years into starting a business that melted metal. We melted stainless steel and poured it to make industrial castings. Sometimes we're pouring 2,000 pounds of this stuff at one time, and I don't need the people around me to wonder whether I'm going to lose it halfway through pouring that metal.
Right.
You know, so it's the kind of thing you just don't want that out there. Right. So I knew I was okay. I always made sure my sugar was plenty high enough before I did that. So there was never any kind of incident, but you just don't need people second guessing you.
Right.
When I decided to write the book, I told everybody that I knew that I had diabetes, and I asked them if they knew anybody else who had it to let me know, because I'd like to talk to them. So when I did that, a guy that I had known for 20 years came up to me and he said, "Gee, I hear you've got diabetes." I said, "Yeah, I do." And he said, "Well, that's funny. You don't look like a diabetic." Well, that made my point. You know, I don't know what he expected a diabetic to look like,
right?
But it wasn't me. So that's the kind of thing that diabetics know. You know, before we became diabetic, we often thought the same things ourselves.
Right.
So, you know, you've got this underlying body of misinformation out there that's just there. It's been out there for generations, and nobody seems to want to address it.
Right. And that is something that I find for a lot of the invisible disabilities is, you know, oh, well, you don't look like someone who has autism, or you don't behave like someone who has ADHD, or, you know, well, what does that look like? What do you expect to see when you think of somebody who has diabetes or autism or dyslexia or ADHD or any Yep. of the other invisible disabilities? And I've even come to a point where I think sometimes it's really the real and the fake disabilities, because we say, oh yeah, I believe in ADHD, I believe in diabetes, I believe in autism. But then how we react or how we act with somebody who has one of those eligibilities for special education is very different. It is more like we don't believe you.
Hmm. Yeah, either we don't believe you or we just don't believe that this is a serious thing.
Right.
You know, or that if you have it, you know, you can manage it. You know, if I had it, I would manage it. You know, because right. people don't know how hard these things are. You know, what we need to do is turn this around so that with all these diseases, you know, the people who are fighting to deal with them deserve respect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do deserve it. You know, sometimes, you know, with type 1 especially, I think about my blood sugar every day, all day. I think about it right now. As we're doing this broadcast, I'm thinking, is my blood sugar going to go too low while I'm doing this?
Right.
Well, it's not, because I know about how much sugar I'm going to burn doing this. Which, by the way, just doing heavy thinking and talking like this burns carbohydrates. Your brain burns carbohydrates tremendously just through thinking. I found that when I write. And a lot of times when I'm sitting there really intensely writing for a couple of hours, I find my blood sugars drop considerably. And that's the reason why. So, you know, you've got all these things that are going on, Shelley, that, you know, you don't think they're affecting your blood sugar, but they are. You know, the brain is one. Certain medications can do it. If you take a lot of cold remedies, they'll raise your blood sugar. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff out there.
Right.
Another factor, too, is physical activity. That's something else that is lost on people. I know many people don't like to exercise because when they think of exercise, they think of going to the gym or running a marathon or something like that. But the fact is that for diabetics, the best kind of exercise is moderate exercise. So if you go for a walk, or even if you just are doing vacuuming or climbing stairs or taking care of the kids, in the context of diabetes, exercise is anything that makes your skeleton move.
Okay.
So when you think about that, it's anything aside from being a couch potato.
Right.
As long as you're moving, you're helping to control your blood sugar. And let me explain quickly the reason for that. When you have muscle, your muscle absorbs glucose right from the bloodstream. And if you have more muscle, it absorbs more glucose. When it does that, it either burns it right away or it saves it for later on. So the more active you are, the more activity your muscle will have in taking that sugar out of your bloodstream. So it's really a key thing that diabetics need to do. And it's not anywhere nearly as hard as people think it is.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't sound very difficult. I mean, just kind of sounds like, you know, just moving around at all. I mean, you said it, just don't be a couch potato.
Yeah.
I mean, and when you have kids and when you have pets, you know, dogs, especially cats, you don't walk, but dogs, you walk.
So. Yeah. Well, that's exactly the thing. And here again, you know, this is the second big factor that I like to get across to people. The two major ways that you control blood sugar are through reducing the number of carbohydrates you eat and being physically active, moderately physically active. If you do those things, you will find your blood sugars are in much better control. In fact, you know, you see all these advertisements on TV. You've got all these happy diabetics dancing in the street and singing and smiling. And it almost makes you wish you were a diabetic, too, you know, because they're all such happy people.
Right.
You know, I mean, I want to do that. But whatever the medication is, if you look at every package insert for all of those type 2 medications, and there are over 50 of them, and I've looked at every one of the inserts, so they're all online, every single one of them has a disclaimer that it works in conjunction with diet and exercise.
Okay.
And yet those ads give the impression that if you take this pill, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to be okay. And
yeah.
it's just not true.
Yeah. I despise most advertisement because I feel like it is very manipulative.
Yep.
And it is, that carries over into advertising for myself. And so I, you know, I have a hard time doing any sort of social media marketing or anything of that nature, because I'm like, I want to make sure that what I'm saying is, you know, I can't guarantee results when we go mm-hmm. into IEP meetings. And so,
sure.
you know, I make sure I make that very clear. Like, I can't promise you rainbows and unicorns. It I'm dealing with people, and, you know, everyone has a different outcome of things, you know, of what's going to become the outcome of our meeting. And I feel that awareness, and actually, you know, what you've said, and thank you, Fran, for commenting, is definitely the key. I mean, diabetes has been around forever, practically, it seems like, at least. I mean, it's been around all of my life.
It's been around for at least thousands of years.
Right. And so, you know, here we are, and we're still, and maybe even more confused than ever before. But yet we have all this information at our fingertips. And so how does one get the information out to the people who need it?
Well, I hate to sound like a self-promoter, but I really do have a mission here. And I've told you what it was earlier. The first step to my dealing with that was to write a book, which I've revised a few times and updated and put in new things that came up. It's easily readable. It tells you the basics. It offers a lot more information than what you and I are talking about in this 1 hour. The other thing I'm doing is putting my program. I developed a thing called the Challenge Diabetes Program that I gave in a lot of venues in Western Massachusetts, which is where I live. And what I decided to do during COVID is to start doing podcasts. And I'm going to put that program online so that people can go to my website and they can download it. And that will give the same information that you and I are talking about here in the same fashion, where it's just a conversational thing with a few slides that'll give you the basics. And I'm hoping that people will use that maybe for book clubs or church groups or whatever civic groups, whatever group they may have, just to learn the basics and hopefully get it out that way. Because you are absolutely right. The world of diabetes is very confusing. And unless you know the basics, you have no way of knowing what's credible and what's not. So that's what I would suggest. Go to my website, have a look at the book. The book you can buy online, by the way. It's on Amazon. And if you get it online, it doesn't cost very much at all.
Right. And if they follow the three things that we suggested, that they can be entered into the drawing to win a free copy from you being here today. So that's, again, subscribing to the YouTube channel, commenting today, and then sharing the post. So right now, Fran is our winner because she's the only one that has commented. But you do have 48 hours from the time this was live until you can make your post and share it. So I don't know if she shared it yet, so I'll have to check that. But yeah, I mean, I think that what you're doing is fantastic. And just like you said, just getting out there, getting the word out there, and just directing people to you, because this statement, some is false. And you know, sadly, it seems like that's almost anything that you look up anymore. You can find information that will take you down the path you want to go, but not necessarily the right information path, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And the problem is that if you start going down the wrong information path, it's going to hurt you. I'll give you kind of a mundane, everyday example. But the word has been out there that you've got a miracle cure in your kitchen cabinet. The cure is cinnamon. And people listen to that and they think that cinnamon somehow is going to fix your diabetes. I actually met a person who uses cinnamon every single morning on her toast because she thinks that's going to help. Well, you know what she does? She has a piece of bread, which is all carbohydrate. She slathers on strawberry jam, and then she sprinkles on some cinnamon and thinks she's doing the right thing. Well, you know, if she just listened to the things we've already talked about today, she would know that that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But that's the kind of thing that's out there that misleads people.
Yeah. Well, and as you were talking, I was thinking, I grew up with cinnamon sugar toast. So I was putting cinnamon with the sugar and then on the bread.
It's the best. It tastes great. Yeah. Right. I have my grandson. He stays over every once in a while, and he loves coming to our house because we have cinnamon raisin toast. Oh. You get one piece of cinnamon raisin toast. So that's our claim to fame. So it's all good.
Good.
Now, I don't make the cinnamon raisin toast a big part of my diet.
Right.
But for him, that's great.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, going back to this is my brain. It's like processing what we said 15, 20 minutes ago about the insulin resistance. And I mean, how do we combat the high cost of the test? And honestly, if you have insulin resistance and you can't cure, I guess would be the right word, insulin resistance, what would be the need to get the test earlier? How would that benefit if people knew earlier in life that they were insulin resistant?
Well, they would be able to watch their carbs and make sure they exercise earlier.
Okay.
That's what it would be.
Okay.
Yep. And as far as the cost of the test goes, that clinical test has been around for a long time, and apparently it is just really expensive to run. So I haven't heard a word about it being commonly available.
Yeah, there's so many things that insurance companies drive that if they wouldn't be so hesitant to pay for certain things, I think maybe some of our medical costs wouldn't be overall what they are, because if we could catch things earlier, if we could do different tests and different trainings or different education earlier, that maybe we wouldn't have all the bad things that we have that cost so much money.
Well, the sooner the better. In fairness to the insurance companies on this particular thing, though, if you were really to test everybody for insulin resistance, you would literally wind up testing everybody because you really don't know who's going to get it. You know, so you can't take a really expensive clinical test and apply it to 30 million people or 300 million people. You know, if there were an inexpensive test like we have for blood glucose tests, by the way. When I first got this in 1981, there was no home glucose test. The way you knew your sugar was high was by taking a piece of what they call test tape. It was a piece of yellow paper that came in a dispenser that looked like a tape measure. You would rip off a little bit of it and dip it in a urine sample. If it stayed yellow, it meant that 2 hours ago, your sugar was fine. If it turned a shade of green or black, it would have been really high 2 hours ago, but it wasn't real-time information.
Right.
It was the best we could do, but it really wasn't that helpful.
Gotcha.
You know, today, if you do a finger stick and you have the mechanism at home, they're cheap. You know, for less than $20, you can get yourself set up to do this.
Right.
You take a drop of blood, put it in this machine, and a few seconds later, you know exactly what your blood sugar is right now.
Right.
I mean, that's a tremendous help. I mean, that was a game changer for every diabetic back when that happened.
Right.
And the same thing may happen if there's ever a cost-effective insulin resistance test.
Thank you for that. Because sometimes I do get into a little more of the gloomy things. And, you know, I do have to remember how far we have come, which is the whole idea of the show is, you know, it used to be one way. And now because of limits that have been busted through and science and technology and innovation and whatever, you know, we are able to do things differently and better than what we were in the past.
The technology is amazing. So much of the problem with diabetes it's not technology or medical science or anything like that. It's just plain basic knowledge.
Right.
That's all it is. Something that happens to me sometimes when I'm doing the courses is that I'll explain about finger sticks, like I just mentioned to you. And some people will always roll their eyes and get this look of fear on their face. And, you know, they say, well, you mean I have to do that? I said, you don't have to do it. You get to do it.
Right.
You know, I didn't get to do this 40 years ago. I wish I did. You know, so it's really what you know and the perspective you have.
Right. Cryax, you say, can I ask a question? Please do. I hope you're still with us. That was a couple minutes ago. I didn't see that come through. And Fran says her diabetes is diet controlled at this time. So yep. That's awesome. So what are some of the things you had mentioned earlier, like some things that are misunderstood and some of the symptoms and some of the things to do to help those symptoms? I believe you talked more about type 2.
Yeah. 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 Let's talk about, stay on that. You know, tell you the truth, type 1s generally have their act together because we have no choice. You know, if we don't take the insulin, we will die sooner than not. But with type 2, that's where a lot of the misleading information is. One of the big ones is that if you're overweight, you're likely to get diabetes. Well, the Centers for Disease Control says that 70% of us are overweight. At the same time, it says that about 10% of us are diabetic. So only about 1 in 7 overweight people actually becomes diabetic. And finally, if you go to the American Diabetes Association's website today, you'll find that there is a disclaimer there that says most overweight people don't get diabetes. But there is a connection between weight and diabetes, and I'd like to explain that. The weight, as far as we can tell, has nothing to do with creating insulin resistance. But what it does do is when you have insulin resistance, it makes it worse. The reason for this is that we have two kinds of fat. There's subcutaneous fat, which is the soft, squishy stuff that we think of when we talk about fat. But there's another kind called visceral fat, which is hard, and it's internally packed around your organs. Visceral fat will increase insulin resistance. So the less of that you have, the better off you are. Once again, the less resistance you have, the less insulin you're going to need, the less stress you put in your pancreas. So the recommendation for losing weight is to lose between 5% and 7%. The reason for that is that happily, when you lose weight, the first weight you lose is the visceral fat.
Oh.
So here again, you know, this is a thing that doesn't sound as extreme as you might think. You know, you think, well, I've got a lot of subcutaneous fat. I'm going to have to lose 30 pounds. Well, you know, really, 5% to 7%, whatever your base weight is, 5% to 7% may not be that much weight.
Right.
But it'll make a big difference.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. And what else? Because we have about 6 minutes to go. So I want to make sure that you get those points out there that you wanted to speak on today.
Okay. What's another one? I guess it's just to combat the idea that the diabetics are somehow weaker than other people. When I look at what diabetics need to do as far as knowing their blood sugar pretty much all day long, every day, in my case, avoiding the lows, avoiding the highs, dealing with things like heavy exercise that will reduce your blood sugar, but then raise it at the same time, and I'll explain that quickly. Your liver is another thing that throws a monkey wrench into things, because your liver both produces sugar and it stores it, and it releases it when it thinks you need it. Basically, it's when the fight or flight reflex kicks in. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to have to run away, you're going to need a jolt of adrenaline. So, and you're going to need the sugar to burn. So it throws that sugar into your bloodstream. Well, when you work out really heavy, your blood sugar goes down at first, but then your liver senses that it's going down in a hurry. Must be something going on, and it throws all that sugar into your bloodstream.
Huh.
It took me to figure out how this works, because I was experiencing that. I would work out and think, yeah, sugar's got to be low now, and it wasn't. It was higher than when I started. Well, that's what happens. Okay. So you've got that stuff going on, and that's stuff that we have to think about. It's a very complicated thing, and you have to be on top of it all of the time. So we do that, and many diabetics do many involved things in this life, including a lot of physical things. And we do it just because we're able to deal with these other factors on top of the normal strains of whatever the job is we're trying to do. And that's another reason that diabetics who actually deal with a disease effectively, it's a reason they deserve respect.
Yeah.
They deserve respect. And we also need to encourage people who have diabetes but refuse to acknowledge it. We have to get them to understand that they can do something about this. It's hard, but it's not impossible. And they can live long, healthy lives if they do the right things. But you have to do them.
Right.
Let me tell you one quick story. A guy who worked for me many years ago contacted me a few years ago about something other than diabetes. Turned out that he had diabetes, had type 2, didn't do anything about it. Couldn't take the pain anymore. Went to the hospital one day. They took off one leg on that day, and they took off the other one on the next. And he told me that if I ever get diabetes, to make sure I take care of it. I thought about that afterwards. In fact, I still think about that a lot, because that was during the time when I didn't tell anybody that I had diabetes. And I often wonder, if he knew that I had diabetes, maybe he would have come to me and asked me for some advice. But since he didn't know I had it, that possibility wasn't open. But if he did, I could have explained it to him, and maybe he would have taken care of his diabetes and he would still be alive today. He actually died a couple of years after I talked to him. So, you know, but that's how critical this stuff is, Shelley. You know, we have to have a better attitude about diabetics and diabetes and make it something that you get respect for dealing with, rather than being looked down upon because they think you're fat, lazy, irresponsible. You know, that has no place here.
Yeah. And that's what #NoLimits is about, is trying to get people to understand the differences that all of us have. We all have things about us that are different and things that we should be proud of, because that's what makes us who we are. And, you know, letting people know that we are going through something, you know, whether it's that we have diabetes or that we, you know, and it's not that you have to walk around with a big, you know, like the sandwich billboards that they have, but you know, that if you're doing your blood test, or you're, you know, not eating certain foods at a event where there's a lot of people and there's like a buffet kind of, you know, a meal, or, you know, not trying to hide the things that you're doing to take care of yourself, because that's exactly what you're doing, is you're taking care of yourself.
You know, I think the way to look at it is that you're generating opportunities to tell people about it. You know, how much time do we have left?
About a minute.
Real quick. I'm at a dinner. I'm ordering the Polish platter. It's got stuff with carbs, stuff that doesn't have carbs. Guy sitting next to me says, "You're going to eat all that?" I explained what I was going to eat and why, and how I analyzed the carb content of each one of these foods. Following day, he asked me how my blood sugar was. I said, "It's perfect." I hit her right on the nose. So that was an opportunity to explain exactly what I'm dealing with. So that's the kind of thing we ought to be looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, just be proud of, you know, who you are and what makes you who you are, and why it makes you who you are, and why you're taking care of yourself. I think that's a huge problem with a lot of things is we don't promote taking care of ourselves.
Yep.
And if we promoted that more, then I think maybe a lot of things, anxiety, mental health, diabetics. I mean, there's so many things that people keep hidden because, well, we can't let anybody know because that's taboo. And we don't talk about those things. And we don't talk about how we take care of ourselves to combat those things or manage those things or deal, whatever the word is to use in that statement there. So Chet, thank you so much for all of this information. And thank you for continuing to get the word out about diabetes and what it is and how it works really. And thank you for being on #NoLimits and being my guest today. I've learned a lot, and I will be processing this for several days.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for having me, Shelley. This helps the cause.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone who joined. Thanks, CRYAX and Fran, and we will see you next time.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.